When we normally think of celebrities, we think of their touched up, airbrushed, computer animated magazine cover images. Celebrities, more often than not, are beautiful. They're even the height of beauty. They're handsome and they're rugged. They always look right. They're posed in just the right way, as if they're some kind of giant doll, wearing the right clothes, always making the right facial expressions, doing the right thing, scripted. There is one thing, though, that certainly brings a celebrity back down to earth pretty fast. Mugshots. Not a whole lot of people look good in a mugshot, even the most beautiful people. Nick Nolte looks especially bad in mugshots. But mugshots are the sort of thing that take our image, our impression of a beautiful person, a celebrity, for example, and it brings that image really back down to earth quickly. And it reminds us that no matter how touched up a person is, or no matter how famous a person is, no matter how much wealth they have, how many levels of security they have to keep the outside world out, they're still just human beings with faults and failures and sins. That outside beauty, all the handsome, rugged, good looks, they're ruined in a moment of immorality, spoiled, if you will. So it's hard to see somebody any longer as beautiful when you discover that they are sinful and that they are just another human being like all the rest of us. Outward beauty, even with all of that being said, is prized above many other qualities in our cultural mindset. We want to be the cover model. Just going down the aisle at the store, checking out, putting your food on the conveyor belt, what's right in front of your eyes, except for the gum and the Tic Tacs, is magazine covers that say, new beauty tips, try this new makeup, 101 tips to make you look your best, be the fabulous you that you've always wanted to be. Health magazines, fitness magazines, beauty magazines, Cosmopolitan. And of course, there's all of the celebrity gossip magazines. We're being told right there at the grocery store, and every time we turn on the TV, that we're not as beautiful as we should be, or as beautiful as we could be, and we're definitely not as beautiful as other people are out there. We are deeply concerned, my friends, and often to the point of obsession with how people see us. Am I attractive? Am I masculine? Am I feminine? Do I make others envious when they see me walking down the street? And there seems to be this constant fixation on what celebrities are wearing and what makeup they're using and if their children will be pretty just like them. But we need to realize an important lesson about outward beauty. First of all, that this condition is not a new one. And that it's not necessarily a bad thing to be beautiful and to regard others as beautiful. There is a warning, though, given in 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 4. Notice the way that the apostle puts it here as he says, speaking of the outer adornment or the adornment of the woman, he says in verse 4, let it be the hidden person of the heart with the imperishable quality of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is precious in the sight of God. And that, of course, is contrasted with the outward appearance, expensive clothes and putting an emphasis on outer beauty, makeup, clothes, and jewelry, and that sort of thing. Not that those things are necessarily evil, but they certainly could be either contributors or signs that there's something going wrong in the heart. Solomon warns young men about the deceptiveness of false beauty, as he says in Proverbs chapter 11, and please notice that with me if you will, in Proverbs 11 and verse 22, as he has this to say, as a ring of gold and a swine's snout, so is a beautiful woman who lacks discretion. So this temptation to focus on the outward beauty has always existed, and the Bible does recognize that there are people who are beautiful. And there's nothing wrong with recognizing that as simply a matter of fact. It's the obsession with it the distraction with it that's the problem. Let's be clear about this also in a positive way, that God did create men and women to be attractive to each other. And if you consider somebody, again, in a matter-of-fact way, to be beautiful or to be handsome, that fact is not a sin. It is not a sin to be handsome or to be beautiful, and it is most certainly, this is certainly the hyperbole of the century here, it is certainly not a sin to consider your own spouse to be incredibly, physically attractive to you. God created our bodies with an eye to attractiveness. And it's not that God is vain or anything, but He did confidently state in Genesis 1, verse 31, that what He created in man was very good. He looked at His creation. He looked at the design. He looked at the way that we're put together, the way that we look, the way that we act, the way that we move. And He said that this is a very good thing. When Adam first laid eyes upon his wife Eve in Genesis chapter 2, verse 23, the very first thing he does is bust out poetry. And if you look at your own spouse, and you are so motivated, so stimulated by the very appearance of your wife, that you would bust out poetry as well, then you're certainly doing something that is by God's design. Not only that, but God wants us to enjoy the beauty of our spouses. As it's noted in several places, in Proverbs chapter 5, for example, in 15 through 22, or in Ecclesiastes 9 and verse 9, love your wife all the days of your life because she is your reward in this life. And as long as physical attraction is directed toward the right ends, then there's nothing wrong with enjoying a person's beautiful attributes. The marriage bed, after all, according to Hebrews 13, verse 4, is supposed to be seen as a holy thing. Not only that, but when you open up the Song of Solomon, go ahead and have your Bibles open to Song of Solomon just for a few moments in this introduction. I want to notice a few passages here where the characters in the Song of Solomon, who we see as very virtuous people, and rightly so, are not afraid to call each other beautiful and handsome in different ways. For all of the other traits and characteristics that they see about each other, and there are plenty, good characteristics, moral characteristics, things on the inside, the more substantial characteristics, they still see each other as beautiful. Notice in chapter 5 and verse 10 of the Song of Solomon, chapter 5 and verse 10, this is the woman speaking to her male counterpart here, saying, "My beloved is dazzling and ruddy, outstanding among 10,000. Now, maybe you're kind of a frumpy person, but are you in love with your spouse enough that she would say that about you? No matter what your actual physical appearance is, are you so stimulated by the healthy relationship that you have, so directed toward each other emotionally, that among 10,000 men, your husband still stands out as amazing and outstanding? Now, clearly at 33, that still applies, but do you still see your spouse the same way throughout all of your life? She goes on to say, "His head is like gold, like pure gold. His locks are like clusters of dates and black as a raven. His eyes are like dove beside streams of water, bathed in milk and reposed in their setting. His cheeks are like a bed of balsam, banks of sweet-scented herbs. His lips are lilies, dripping with liquid myrrh." Go on to say here in verse 16, "His mouth is full of sweetness, and he is wholly desirable. This is my beloved and this is my friend." So even with all the physical characteristics that she noted about her beloved, what was it that excited her most? Was that he was wholly desirable. Every part of him, the outside as well as the inside. And that he was first and foremost her friend. Notice back in chapter 1. Chapter 1 and verse 16. "How handsome you are, my beloved, and so pleasant. Indeed, our couch is luxuriant. The beams of our house are cedars, our rafters, cypresses." In verse 10, she says, or he says now, "Your cheeks are lovely with ornaments, your neck with strings of bead." He says in verse 9, "To me, my darling, you are like my mare among the chariots of Pharaoh." Of course, we joke around a little bit there near the end of the book when we see in chapter 7 this description that he offers of his love, and he describes her in terms of her neck is like a great tower, and of course we make jokes about that, and you know, everybody thinks their wife is as beautiful as goats bounding around on the hills, but think about what he's saying here of his beloved, that he does recognize that she is immensely and incredibly physically beautiful. And the Bible candidly speaks of the beauty of many people. There are people that are described as handsome and beautiful. Genesis chapter 29, verse 17, or Deuteronomy 21, verse 11. In 2 Samuel 11, verse 2, of course, and in Esther chapter 2, verse 7, most famously of all, probably the most beautiful person in the entire Bible, being Esther the queen. But what spoils beauty? Because in all this talk of beauty and the human body being a beautiful thing and finding each other attractive in a healthy and constructive and like God-designed way, there are some things that can spoil beauty. Like I said, the mugshot of the celebrity. Proverbs 11:22, like we already read, said, "As a ring of gold in a swine's snout, so is a beautiful woman who lacks discretion." Interestingly enough, I did not have a hard time looking on Google for a picture of a ring of gold in a swine's snout. This just happened to be my favorite. The woman described in Proverbs 11 is far more than just disappointing. She's actually a monstrosity. What I mean by a monstrosity is when two things don't seem to go together quite right. Like a bit of compassion in Frankenstein, so is a lot of beauty matched up with a lack of discretion. And what a shame it is too. What a waste of outward beauty to see it ruined by a lack of inward beauty. And it's not the case oftentimes. Isn't it the case that some of the most beautiful people in the world seem to have a lackluster character? And I don't mean personality, I mean character. A person's physical beauty can't make up for or hide his or her lack of good judgment. The Bible commentary said this, "Outward female beauty with indiscreet conduct is valueless and morally ugly." And this is why so much emphasis is placed on the value of wisdom in the book of Proverbs. As Solomon says a number of times, that wisdom is what makes us good people. Wisdom is what makes us beautiful. Wisdom is what makes us full of substance and usefulness and character. Go to Proverbs chapter 5. And please notice in Proverbs chapter 5, verses 20 through 23. And of course, this is in direct contrast with the beauty that is seen in the previous verses. When you do love your own spouse, when you do love your own wife, when you do enjoy her physical beauty, but look what he says in contrast to that, beginning in verse 20. "Why should you, my son, be exhilarated with an adulteress and embrace the bosom of a foreigner? For the ways of a man are before the eyes of the Lord, and he watches all of his paths. His own iniquities will capture the wicked, and he will be held with the cords of his sin. He will die for lack of instruction, and in the greatness of his folly, he will go astray." Go to chapter 6 now. And notice chapter 6, beginning in verse 24. "To keep you from the evil woman," he says, "from the smooth tongue of the adulteress, do not desire her beauty in your heart, nor let her catch you with her eyelids. For on account of a harlot, one is reduced to a loaf of bread, and an adulteress hunts for the precious life." The same can be said in chapter 7, where he describes the adulterous woman in verses 6 through 23. It might be very easy to satisfy yourself with a beautiful, indiscreet person for a while. But my friends, whether you're young or old, single or married, here is the great advice on marriage from the Bible. Never give in. No matter how beautiful a person is, never break your marriage vow with somebody. No matter how beautiful a person is, do not commit fornication. Don't live with somebody, shack up with somebody, sleep with somebody, no matter how beautiful they are. No matter how beautiful they are, there is nobody who is worth destroying your relationship with your spouse or with God. And I think we find with time that when we do engage in a relationship with somebody who is outwardly beautiful but bereft of morals, that that very person becomes very unattractive to us. They become very ugly to us. I suppose if you asked the adulterous husband or wife who has since repented of their sin what they think of the person they committed adultery with, and I don't think that there's a good feeling found in the bunch. Ask somebody who's recovering from pornography addiction whether in hindsight they actually think the women in those videos, the women in those magazines, were actually beautiful. And I think in hindsight, there's not a whole lot of beauty there to enjoy. Not a lot of beauty. We see, therefore, that a person becomes quite ugly and unattractive when his or her physical qualities are not matched up by a set of spiritual qualities that are designed and commanded of us by God. Just as food spoils and wounds fester, there are a number of moral failures that mar a person's true beauty. And let me give you a few that I have come up with on my own, though perhaps in your personal experience there are others that you can think of as well. A beautiful person who is nevertheless dishonest. Lying makes everybody ugly, doesn't it? And lying is also very embarrassing. When you get discovered in your lie, nobody looks graceful when they're discovered in a lie. But not only that, but anger issues. Anger issues. You know how it is when you're driving down the freeway and you see the beautiful person driving the big, beautiful, expensive car, though I tend to look more at the car than the person. And they do something just nasty on the road, cut somebody off, throw the finger out there, yell and scream, and you're going, you just made the whole thing look bad. Nobody deserves to be driving a Shelby GT350 with an attitude like that. It's best car ever, right? Mustang GT350. But anger issues make anybody look ugly. Selfishness makes a person look very ugly also. Selfishness. And again, this is where relationships come into play. Maybe if you're in college, maybe if you're a young person and you're single, maybe you're looking for a certain kind of person, a beautiful kind of person. You've got a preset idea of what the ideal boyfriend or girlfriend, husband or wife might look like. And you find someone who is just over the top beautiful, but they're selfish. I give it 3 months, honestly. Maybe less, before you want to pull your hair out dealing with somebody who is selfish. Sexual unfaithfulness. You can't hardly look at a person who's been unfaithful to you. No matter how beautiful they are, you can't hardly look a person in the eyes when they've been unfaithful. Ugly language. Ugly language is just disgusting. A beautiful face with something ugly coming out of the mouth, that ruins anybody. Financial irresponsibility. Do you really enjoy dating or being married to an incredibly beautiful person who is putting you into the poorhouse, who carries a weight of debt that they expect you to magically handle now? Dishonor toward parents. Maybe that's something we don't appreciate as much in our culture today. But if you're looking for somebody to date, and especially with an eye toward eventually marrying a person, look at how he or she treats parents. Because if you have a guy who does not respect his mother and your father, if you're looking at a girl who does not love her father and her mother, who do not regard the wisdom of their parents, well, you're getting a preview of what marriage is going to look like for you later. Arrogance as well, and bullying. Some of the most handsome and beautiful people in a high school often are the worst bullies. And perhaps there are more than a few of us who can look back at our own experiences in high school and remember just how handsome and how beautiful that person was who tore us down, who hurt our self-image, who made us feel like trash. The Bible provides two excellent examples of this concept. Two people who were very beautiful, ruggedly handsome in their own way, but didn't have a lick of character to back them up. It's interesting that these two men serve as bookends for a man like David. And David was certainly handsome. He was plenty handsome. Let's not be wrong about that. But what did David have that Saul and Absalom didn't have? What did David have that his one-time king and mentor didn't have? What did David have that his handsome, rugged, long-haired son didn't have? It was character. It was character. Both Saul and Absalom are described as handsome men. 1 Samuel 9, verse 2, and 2 Samuel 14, verse 25. But both of them also hated David. Both of them were self-absorbed and were willing to sacrifice everything in order to stay in power or achieve power. Both of them refused to repent of their sins when given the opportunity, and both came to a miserable end. Now, the Bible might say that Saul and Absalom were handsome. Unequaled in Israel, at one point, Saul was described as a full head taller than everybody around him. But both of these men end up seeming pretty ugly in hindsight, don't they? And the fact that others found them physically attractive doesn't really impress me at all either. It doesn't endear these men to any honest heart to see that in their lives they were adored for their appearance, but never respected for their character or their substance. Remember what was said quite famously by God in 1 Samuel 16, verse 7, one of the great verses of the Old Testament. As Samuel is sent to look for a new king to replace Saul, who had become so wicked and embittered and twisted by his own anger, this is the advice that God gave to the prophet Samuel. Do not look at his appearance or at the height of his stature, because I have rejected him. For God sees not as man sees, for man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. So as we bring our lesson near its close, I ask you, what is true beauty? There are plenty of beautiful people out there physically. There are plenty of handsome people out there. You and I, we're all handsome and beautiful in our own ways as well. But if we're really going to esteem somebody as beautiful, what are we really looking for? And more importantly, what is God looking for? Well, the first is this, in Proverbs 31, verse 30. The writer of the Proverbs says, charm is deceitful and beauty is vain, but a woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised. Such a woman is very attractive because her respect for God and His laws makes her completely dependable, trustworthy, and desirable, not just as somebody to look at, but as somebody to live with and grow with and learn with. This woman does not do things to hurt her husband, abuse her children, betray their trust, or jeopardize their home. And even as this woman ages and weathers the trials of life, she actually becomes more attractive the older she gets. Let me fill you in on a little secret of mine. Please don't think this is strange, but I think elderly Christian women are the most beautiful women on earth. I truly do believe. When you look at elderly Christian women, those who have lived a life of faithfulness, who have put God first, who have put family second, there's a twinkle in their eye. There is something special about a woman who has reached that point in her life. And there is a beauty that so far transcends the physical that you cannot help but see them as truly, utterly, substantially beautiful. As they say in the book of Proverbs, in this very context, many daughters have done nobly, but you excel them all. To excel them all, you have to excel in more than just the outward. But it also says in 1 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 10, but rather by means of good works as befits women making a claim to godliness. Serving others and practicing kindness helps make a person beautiful and enjoyable to be around. Everybody likes to be around this person. There's, if you ask somebody, here's a person who is full of good works and is making a claim to godliness, who lets her works do the talking, who lets her actions do the talking, who is kind and gentle and generous to everybody around her, does anybody hate that person? Does anybody grumble and complain about going to that person's house for dinner? Of course not. We love that kind of person. And not only does this person seem more attractive, but he or she is refreshingly good to be around. They're an influence on those around them. I would rather be around a person who is warm and hospitable, funny and kind, than a person who is supremely physically beautiful, but cold, inattentive, selfish, and arrogant. And in 1 Peter 3, verse 4, let it be the hidden person of the heart. The hidden person that you can't see on a magazine cover. The hidden person that can't be touched up on a computer. With the imperishable quality, imperishable. Don't you love that? The book of 1 Peter, by the way, is all about imperishable things. Read all of chapter 1, and it talks about the imperishable treasure of being a Christian. It's not gold like the treasures of this world, but it is the imperishable treasure that we have. A spiritual treasure. And it is the same with our character on the inside. As the body ages and becomes more frail, we are actually refining an imperishable quality of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is precious in the sight of God. Do you see that as precious? Is that the quality you look for most in a companion? Is that the quality you're teaching your children? And last of all, Psalm 149, verse 4. For the Lord takes pleasure in His people, not because they're beautiful, not because they're attractive, not because they look good. No, He takes pleasure in His people. He will beautify the afflicted ones with salvation. In all of the adornment that we place upon ourselves, our clothes and our jewelry and our hair, the image that we cultivate in other people's minds, you know what God offers us? The raiment of salvation. We are clothed in Jesus Christ, as it says in Colossians chapter 3, when we are baptized. And there is no better garment to wear than Jesus Christ as a garment for your life. The book of Revelation describes us in the afterlife, in Christ's army, as being arrayed in white clothes. Beautified, my friends. Beautified with salvation. This only lasts for a while. A lifetime if you have enough money. Salvation lasts forever. So what kind of beauty do you want to take upon yourself? The one the world offers you that is fleeting and that no matter how hard you try, you might never really achieve? Or the beauty of salvation that is offered freely to you this morning? Mark 16, verse 16 says, he who believes and is baptized shall be saved. So whatever need you might have, let it be known at this time by coming forward as we stand and sing.